afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. Remember, today is Friday, February 28th, 2020, and I have my conversation with James Corbett. It was pre-recorded Wednesday evening, so the second and third segment today will be my conversation, and I am live right now, and there is so much to talk about in just the 20 minutes of my fame that I have to share with you. So let's get started right away with the market report again for Friday, February 28th, 2020. And I'll tell you what, every once in a while in the program, you'll hear us say, buckle up, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a rough ride. And today was one of those days that I hope you had your seat belts on. It was a buckle up kind of a day. And of course, we're going to start with gold. Great buying opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who want to add to your portfolios, begin your portfolios, and who want to save and convert those fiat dollars into real money. Gold was down. Right now, we're in the New York spot price aftermarket, down 4%, down $67.60 at $1,577. We even touched 1562 for the low. And I thought maybe we'd be heading. I'm looking at 1550. I was looking at 1550 for the low. I think this was a nice little turnaround. We'll have to see where it goes, because right now I don't think anybody knows where anything is going at this moment. Silver down 6.65%, down $1.18 at $16.67. Ladies and gentlemen, you can buy bags of 90% silver, 50 cents over spot. You can buy silver rounds, buffaloes, for what, 60, 70 cents over spot. If you buy 500 or 300 or more, you can get it a little bit less than that. I mean, these are deals of the century. Platinum, and I'll go into a little bit of details of why I think of what we're seeing and why it's doing that. Platinum followed suit with gold down 4.44%, $40, $866. Palladium, it was down like 12%. I'm not quite sure what the I know it was down more than 12% earlier in the day. I don't know if that was the cap, but right now for palladium, it was down 10%, down $289, $2,615. And, nobody has any rhodium, but it's just, for me personally, it's interesting to follow. You know, when anything goes from 400 to 12,000, it's interesting to follow. And rhodium, of course, was down 8%, down $900 at 11.6. So I think, ladies and gentlemen, I think what happened, what did the dollar do today? The dollar was down 0.38 at 98.01. Of course, that probably fell a little bit, didn't fall a whole lot. We're still at 98.01. The Fed chair came out today, Powell, and said, well, yeah, you know, we will accommodate the markets. He might be a day too late. I'm not quite sure what his half point cut come March, unless he does an emergency cut, which he'll probably do next week. That's what I would project. I'll probably do some sort of emergency cut, maybe a quarter point. Everybody's expecting a half a point. Turned the market around a little bit today, but not a whole lot. And I'm just letting these final numbers to go through just to see where the paper marks finally ended up at. So we had crude oil. That was down 2.03% at 45.06. So, you know, it is just so truly amazing, the spin that you hear. And this is what they have to do. This is their jobs. But the spin that you hear on the financial news programs, it's interesting. You know, they're still talking about how strong the economy is, how strong the consumer is, how strong the corporations are, how strong the dollar is, how crude oil prices are falling. It's going to bring in lower gasoline prices. This is all good for a strong economy. But they're all forgetting about the debt. They're all forgetting that the only reason the consumer is strong is debt. He has no money. He has no buying power. The only buying power that he has is how much the banks are willing to loan them. So you tell me, how much buying power. When you have an economy that is based on 70% consumerism, just how strong that consumer is when it's based on debt. Good grief. Anyway, I'm not going to get in there because I want to mention corporate debt. And then I'm going to tell you why I think the markets are dropping out of bed like they are, because it really doesn't all make sense. I mean, the coronavirus, yes, the boogeyman. We don't know how it's going to affect the supply chains and everything. You have China shutting down 60 million people. People don't go to jobs. You have Europe. You have the Pope that's sick. You have Europe. We have open borders everywhere. And, you know, to one degree, how can governments be taking this so seriously, but yet people don't seem to be taking it that serious? So we don't know, because we're not getting information. Oh, it's going to be gone in April. I don't know. So again, it is a lot of uncertainty, but our economy already stinks. It isn't as good. It isn't the greatest economy that we've ever had. So with that, let's go to the paper markets and see what the final numbers were. Okay, they brought the markets back somewhat. This was due to, I believe, Powell coming out with a rate cut. It did stem. The NASDAQ is actually flat for the day. So the Dow was down 1.39% at 357 points, 25,409. The NASDAQ was up 0.89 at 8,567. The S&P was down 24 points, 2,954. They stemmed the bleeding. And that was with the promise of a rate cut. So what happens after we get the rate cut? You have the 10-year yield. I don't even know what to think of this. The 10-year yield, 1.13%. 1.13%, but I'll guarantee you, your rates and your mortgages and your credit card rates aren't going to go down. They're not going to be, you know, I'm sure they're going to stay the same. 1.13% on the 10-year. We're going to talk, I don't have enough time to go into that 10-year yield and what that means at 1.13% in a 20-minute live segment here. So we'll touch on that on Monday. And we'll see where these markets are following or you know, settling out come Monday. The euro did go up 0.42 at 110. Now, your Asian markets, you know, Japan was down 3.67%. Hong Kong was down 2.42%. London was down 3.18%. Germany was down 3.86%. And for the day, the paper markets, the Dow was down 1,000 points. So they did a good job bringing it back 700 points. And so is this the reversal? Well, it's going to be enough for some people to think that this is a great buying opportunity for the paper markets. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. You have Bitcoin continues to go down 1.97%. So it's like people are selling whatever they can. You know, the gold, people are talking about margins. People are selling in order to cover their margins. They're selling gold. They're dumping anything they can. They're talking about a panic. I don't think we've really seen a panic. You know, we saw palladium. I mentioned to you that it was down more than 12%. And I think palladium brought the rest of the sector down. And I think you're going to see higher prices in gold on Monday. But if palladium goes down another 12%, maybe we could see some more pressure on the other precious metals. So again, I don't know where this is end. I think gold's bottom is 1550. But palladium led the free fall in the metal sector today. We saw gold slide as much as 4%, as I talked about. And the word on the street, you have investors, you have traders that they're having to meet margin calls for other products, so they're selling what they can. And, you know, you have these, you know, particularly those with mining shares. I didn't have a chance to see what the miners did, But anybody who sells mining shares are saying that's why the gold went down, is because they're covering their margin calls. You know, I'm sure that's true to some extent, but on the other hand, those are pretty steep drops. And so again, as sentiment had deteriorated, you had investors, they closed some of their open positions in currencies, and gold failed, prices failed to make new highs. And so again, we're going to see this price pressure. Investors want to find cash and very liquid assets attractive, and you know, they're encouraging them. What do you think? You know, people will call me and they'll tell me they talked to their stockbroker or their financial planner, whatever you want to call them. And they said, well, I should sell my gold in order to do this. Ladies and gentlemen, you should never sell your gold in order to do that. And you shouldn't listen to anybody who tells you to do that. You have that gold and you bought that gold for a purpose. And you keep it in there no matter what. It's private. Lots of these, and again, I'm not suggesting anything here. This is just my opinion. Gold is private. You know, so if you need to sell your gold in order to do something else, you probably shouldn't be doing that other thing. You don't have the money to do it. You don't have the disposable income to do it. So when you trade, things have to make sense. You don't chase yields. You don't chase bottoms. Because I think a lot of what we're seeing, and I'm sure it is, and I'm sure it's talked about elsewhere, but you know, we have a system of algorithms. You know, they have strike points. And once they hit those levels, it doesn't matter if the news is good or bad, they're going to continue to the next level. We saw it happen to the upside. Remember when, oh my gosh, we were ready to go into war with Iran and the markets went up. Well, that didn't make sense. Gold went down, markets did make sense. Well, it was because of the algorithms. So I think when so it happens to the upside, it also happens to the downsides. So every time they hit those levels, and this is my logic, every time they hit those levels, they just went to the next and the markets kept, and the levels kept being breached. And so that's why it just dropped. Because to me, I get the supply chain and everything. But again, did it really, should these markets be reacting to the way they are to the information that we have? Or the information that we have in the coronavirus is so little and it's so far worse than our nightmares. I don't know. But, so where is the plunge protection team? Either they chose not to be active, or whatever they were doing wasn't effective. Today we saw the part of the plunge protection team with Powell. So I look at it this way. The protection team was powerless to stem these losses. So I'm not sure a half a point is going to help. And then how low are we going to go? How often do we talk about negative interest rates on this program? Very often. And that's where we're headed. That's great for an economy, isn't it? That's healthy. So we've lost trillions and trillions of dollars. I see numbers, I don't know if it's daily counts, 6 trillion, 5 trillion, 4 trillion, 8 trillion, 10 trillion. Nobody really knows yet. But we haven't really heard of the effects of all of this money being lost. You know, if you have these small brokerage houses and they can't meet and their clients don't meet their margin calls and they don't have the money, they're out. So we haven't heard any of the domino effect from the trillions of dollars that are lost from what we've experienced in the stock market here of the past 2 weeks. You know, we talk about debt. What do you think it's doing to these U.S. corporate debt? $10 trillion. That comes out to roughly 47% of the overall economy, which is a record. Experts from the International Monetary Fund to the trillion-dollar asset manager BlackRock have warned of the risk posed. How do you think these are being affected? I mean, there's a lot of little areas that aren't being addressed other than the numbers that are going down. And I think this is also why there's so much focus on the coronavirus. You can't read it. You can't find anything else out. All the market drop is all based on the virus. Good grief. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Doriel Robini, you know, he's the Dr. Doom. You know, he was one of the economists that was correct in predicting the 2008, the Great Recession. And he talks about other white swans. He says there are other ones that are circling the global economy that we can't forget about. And these are the same black swans, white swans, whatever you want to call them, that we talk about every day on this program. We do live in a lot of uncertainty. You know, nobody really knows what the bottom is or what the cost is until after the fact. So I guess it's a point of where you want to be. You know, you can hold on to your paper investments like they tell you to. You know, only the big guys get out. They've already been out. Multinational corporations buying back their own shares, pumping up the price. They get out. The little guy comes in, and here we are. They've got creamed. That's all I've been reading about before the markets began to correct, based, you know, due to the coronavirus, was, you know, the little guy is getting back into the market. The little guy is getting back into the market. That's when you get out, when that little guy gets into the market. The signs are always there, and we're always here for your gold and silver needs. So you got to give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's going to be an interesting weekend. It's going to be an interesting Monday. Get your gold and silver. I think prices will be higher on Monday. But we'll have to see how the weekend plays out and follow the news. We're here for you. And great prices on your silver, 50 cents over spot for 90% silver. You have your 1 ounce silver rounds for 60, 70 cents over. And you have your American Silver Eagle. Great buys. You have your Gold Eagles fractional pieces. Now's the time to do it. Take advantage of the buy. 800-375-4188. I'll be back with my conversation with James Corbett, so please stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm very pleased to welcome back to the program James Corbett. And as we all know, James is the founder and editor of The Corbett Report, which was founded in 2007. And in 2012, he became the editorial writer for The International Forecaster. And, of course, we know The International Forecaster was created and founded by the our friend, Bob Chapman. And you can visit James's website at thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. And if you'd like a complimentary copy of The International Forecaster, you can go to their website, theinternationalforecaster.com. Welcome back, James.
Well, hello, Melody. Good to be back.
Yes, thank you for joining us. And, you know, you just spent some time in Acapulco, and you were at a conference, Anarchopoco.
Yes. Well done.
Thank you very much. But and I viewed the list of speakers, and it certainly seems like an interesting group of characters, but impressive at the same point in time. And Ron Paul was there, and he actually seemed like he was the father of them all. He seemed like he was the eldest of all. But what is the purpose of the conference? And if you maybe you could share, if you'd like, some of the highlights, and what was your lecture about? Because I believe you lectured there.
Sure, that's right. Well, Anarchopoco, as the name might suggest, is not about narco or narcotics. It's about anarchism, of course. And so that was the theme of the conference, I suppose. There was also some related workshops and conferences like Cryptopoco, talking about cryptocurrency and what have you, but generally around the idea of anarchism and the unnecessity or even immorality of the state and government itself. So that was a lot of what the themes that people were talking about. And as you say, of course, Ron Paul was there to talk about the end of the Fed and other such issues that, of course, have been at the core of his political message for decades now. And it was my first time ever seeing or, in fact, meeting Dr. Paul in person, as I did get to interview him. And that is now up on my site for people who are interested, where I only had 15 minutes to talk to Ron Paul. So what are you going to talk to him about? Of course, ending the Fed and the movement to end the Fed. So there was that. Lots of interesting talks. And my own speech was on essentially the idea that statism, the idea that we need government, is kind of a religious belief. And so I held a worship service for the Church of the State, where we could all properly worship government in the way that it intends to be worshipped. And for people who don't really understand even what I'm saying, the video will be available at some point, and so you will see it eventually. I did get a lot of good feedback about it. A lot of people thought it was funny and interesting, which is all I could possibly ask for.
Humor is always good. Humor is always good. I do have a couple of questions. I know one of the questions you asked Ron Paul was, do you think that liberty can be achieved through the political process? And Paul responded that the political system is just a reflection of the prevailing ideas at the time. And the political system often overrides the philosophical motivations of those who run the office. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's an important point of his answer, because, yeah, there will people will often say politics is downstream of culture, and if there is a cultural shift, then that is going to be reflected in politics. And politicians, they love nothing more than getting in front of a parade and pretending like they're leading it. So, I mean, you can talk till you're blue in the face how government came in and ended child labor and things like that. No, child labor was coming to an end, and the politicians got in front of it and pretended like they had been ahead of that curve, when in fact they were just following it. And we see this time and time again throughout history. But the other part that you mentioned there that Ron Paul brings up that I think is important to note is that, yeah, but politicians, the political process and the political stew corrupts the politicians no matter how well-intentioned they may be. And perhaps there are actually well-intentioned people who get into politics in the first place, but they are corrupted by the process itself, by the system itself, so that you can't remain ideologically pure while being steeped in that political cesspool, shall we say. The swamp, as it were. And I fully agree with that. That's why, ultimately, I think, personally, no, you cannot achieve liberty through politics. In fact, they're polar opposites. You'll never get to liberty by voting for a nicer, kinder slave master who promises to handle the slaves with a lighter chain. No, that's not how we actually achieve liberty. But that's not exactly what Ron Paul said. I'm not putting words in his mouth.
So there's pretty much very little to be done to change it. We come to accept it and then learn what liberty really is. And I mean,
I think my point is that it's not going to happen as a political process.
Right.
It's going to happen to the extent that it happens in people engaged in freedom together, in living that life and experiencing it. And that involves things that are within the purview of the state and things that are outside of the purview of the state. And people who need a better handle on this, I highly suggest that they read some of the works of Samuel E. Konkin III, S-E-K-3, who was a libertarian, I suppose, writer who was writing in the 70s, primarily. Although he was writing in the 80s and 90s as well. But he wrote things like the New Libertarian Manifesto and the Agorist Primer, talking about agorism, which is the idea of essentially, he had actually a very detailed plan that I suggest people read about the development of sort of a free society within the society that exists right now and how that will grow and ultimately overtake the state. And based around voluntary interactions and agorism, which comes from the Greek word, the agora, which is the market where people traded, because ultimately it's about free exchange between people. That is the basis of this. And sometimes free exchange between people is, of course, verboten by the laws of the land. You can't do this or that with your money, or you can't put this substance in your body, or whatever it may be. But of course, those markets still exist, and in fact, they tend to draw in cartels. I mean, the drug cartels have so much money and power and can inflict such violence and do incredibly horrible, unspeakable things precisely because there is prohibition in place. No better blatant example of that from U.S. history than one century ago, when, of course, you passed the 19th Amendment? I don't know. I'm not American. The amendment to bring in prohibition. And what did that do? It empowered the gangsters. The mafia loved prohibition because, of course, everyone was still going to drink. And so now they were going to have to be criminals to do it. They were going to go to the criminal cartels in order to do what people had been doing freely just the year before the lawmakers decided to change the law of the land. Freedom does involve doing things that the state might not like, and people already do that so much of their life. It's just that they don't necessarily realize it. And of course, that was one of the central premises around the Three Felonies a Day book that you may have heard of, where there are so many laws on the books that people are generally committing three felonies a day without even knowing it. And of course, without doing any harm to anyone, without trying to commit any crimes or defraud anyone. But it's just, there are so many laws on the books, some of them quite stupid, some of them that seem reasonable but aren't if you really look into them, and some of them that we all agree with, prohibitions against murder and things like that. But instead of following our moral compass and saying what is morally right and what should I be doing, no, now we're just looking at, oh, well, what does the law say I can do? And if the law permits certain horrible things to be done, like corporations to do this or that or dump this substance over here, well, then it's legal, so they can do it, right? Again, we've lost our moral compass and replaced it with this law book given to us by the lawmakers from on high in the Capitol.
Is this why we're seeing so much chaos around the world with globalization? Because this is sort of like an eruption of, I mean, because the laws are just, it's just more chaotic, and because we're so many peoples and with the globalization and or it doesn't have anything at all to do with...
Well, there is a relation, but I think the chaos comes from the fact that there is an order that is attempting to be imposed on people who are naturally and inherently free and will interact in billions of different ways that can't be understood or predicted or controlled or systematized or organized. But that's exactly what the fundamental ideology of the globalists is to try to systematize and coordinate and categorize and centrally manage every interaction that happens between every person. Of course, there's going to be friction there because people don't generally like that. So they have to be sort of steered and engineered into these grandiose systems that will attempt to basically regulate their behavior. So there will be friction. There will be backlash. That will create chaos. But unfortunately, the chaos generally falls into the hands or onto the side of the people who have the levers of control. In this case, of course, the literal ability to print money out of nothing, which comes in quite handy in a system that's run by on a monetary basis. And so, of course, with that fiat creation advantage, the would-be controllers, the globalists, can essentially engineer any chaos into a win-win for the globalists. And here's an excellent case in point that is playing out in real time as we speak that people can look at and see how it plays out in the news. So, of course, we're seeing all the hype and panic and pandemonium surrounding coronavirus right now and all the craziness that's going on around it. And one would think, if one were looking at this logically, step back and think about this. What this is demonstrating, beyond the medical and everything, but the economic effects of what we're just beginning to see as a result of this disruption, demonstrates perfectly clearly the incredible lunacy of having this just-in-time global supply chain that is vulnerable to disruption anywhere in the world that can completely throw off and derail the entire global economy, which is what is starting to happen now as a result of this, and the shutdown and quarantine in China is starting to have incredibly profound economic effects. You would think people would step back and say, oh, maybe that's why we shouldn't outsource all of our manufacturing capability to another country halfway around the world. Maybe we should keep some of that. Maybe we should have some, if not complete national self-sufficiency, at least some basis for being able to produce the things that we consume and having some emergency measures in place. But actually, I think it's going to go the exact opposite direction. I think the ultimate solution that's going to be presented is no. We need more globalism. We need more global controls. We need bigger global bodies to regulate everything. And we need, of course, more, mm-hmm. just more nodes on this global supply chain so that if a China gets shut down, then, we can go to Vietnam or whatever the case may be. And that's the way they're going to try to push this, because chaos always, if you're looking for an excuse to implement an agenda, you just use the chaos, even if it is caused by the agenda you're trying to implement. You'll just say, well, we need more of that agenda. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, this whole thing about the coronavirus, I wanted to ask you, I got a couple questions about Ron Paul, but now that you're talking about the coronavirus, I guess there was some issues in Japan. I guess the Prime Minister of Japan, Abe, he's getting some, feedback, and his critics are saying that he has failed to, take the lead, take the helm of this crisis and so forth. And now everyone is concerned. Of course, Japan is hosting the Olympics, which run from July 24th until August 9th this year. This is a key goal of his administration the timing can't be good how is Japan acting and reporting on the coronavirus?
I can tell you it's the number one news story, and it is getting a lot of attention right now, and some major things are starting to happen. We haven't seen the kind of mass quarantines or anything. Something like 800 reported infections in the country, but 700 of those are from that cruise ship where they locked everyone inside and just basically made sure that everyone got infected. It was absolute lunacy. But beyond that, I think there's something like 170 cases of infections that have been reported at any rate at this rate in a country of 130 million people. So again, let's put all of this in perspective. Mm-hmm. But even so, it seems to be at this point again, I don't trust any of the numbers coming from any of the lying governments or anything, but from what has been reported and what we can see, this seems to be a disease that is killing people, elderly people, people with pre-existing conditions, smokers, people who are already susceptible to lung diseases of various sorts, not killing healthy adults, not killing children, at least at this point from what we understand. But putting that in perspective, so we're not seeing the mass crackdowns and quarantines in Japan yet, but they certainly could do that. And we're just now receiving word that Prime Minister Abe has ordered all sports and cultural events in the country to be halted for the next 2 weeks, because this will be key to stopping the spreading of the infection. And that includes such things as the Tokyo Yomiuri Giants are going to be playing a couple of their preseason baseball games to empty stadiums. No spectators will be allowed to basically stop any risk of infection spreading, and other games and sporting events are being canceled. And of course, as you say, this is in the lead up to July 2020 Tokyo Olympics, a very, very major thing that the government has been planning for and Japan has been planning for years and years now. And the IOC, the Olympic Committee, has said that they're not going to cancel the games, but obviously that calculus will change if and when the pandemic is officially declared or whatever may take place. So really, I would say it's up in the air between now and July what's going to happen. And I think, yeah, the Abe government desperately wants to avoid having to cancel the games, but we'll see. We'll see how far this progresses.
You know, I mean, this is very, all very odd, and we know very little about it over here. President Trump did a news conference this evening talking about it and who he appointed and so forth. That'll, you know, Vice President the Vice President Pence is going to, you know, take lead on it and so forth. But they really don't talk about the virus itself, you know, other than it's like the flu.
Yeah.
It's like the flu. And it, I know, I think this whole thing is just odd.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not the only one. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. And it's one of those things, like, whatever source you read, you're going to get a different take on it. And so, of course, There is the theory that this is a biological weapon that's been unleashed on purpose, or one that's escaped the lab. There are certainly reasons to at least consider that theory. I have nothing definitive, but there are a lot of things that line up with that, including the fact that the biosafety laboratory level 4 in Wuhan is literally a couple hundred meters from this wet market where they were at least originally tried to blame for the cause of the infection. But now they say there are people who were among the original spreaders who had nothing to do with that market. So it's fallen apart in 18 different ways, all of the different things flying around about this. And then there you have papers that have been rushed to publication and retracted that say that this has mutations in it that look like HIV has been inserted into the genetic code of this coronavirus and what have you, but then that was retracted. And there's back and forth, and there's people who are claiming it is definitely a bioweapon, people who are claiming it's totally natural. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, and probably a lot of the people in the audience aren't either, so I don't know. I say take all of this with a grain of salt, and as I say, I don't trust any of the numbers coming out of any of the governments.
Well, I hear the music that we can trust. We'll be right back. You can trust on that, too. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Oh, can you feel it? Oh, would you tell me again
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my guest today, James Corbett. And, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened in Iowa. You wrote about that, but I just want to finish up on your interview with Ron Paul. You know, again, his view on the Fed, and he said the end of the gold standard in 1971 led to the widespread income inequality that we see today and the elimination of the middle class. Yes. And now we're addicted to free money. Does Mr. Paul's perspectives resonate with you, James?
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, they've been very influential on me over the years, or at least they were certainly in my early years of this. And yeah, essentially, the key problem underlying so many of the problems that we face is the monetary problem. And just that question, which we have all been taught since we were little children to never ask, is, you know, where does money come from? I mean, we're supposed to laugh at
money trees.
Yeah, exactly. It grows on trees. You know, it's a joke. But why? And that, as I mentioned in my interview with Ron Paul, that was one of the things that really struck me when I was researching the Fed for my documentary. I was really looking at the history of that question, the monetary question, in early United States, in the colonial era and then into the formation of the U.S. It was truly the burning bright political center of so much rancorous political debate, and, you know, what kind of central bank should we have, or should we have a central bank, and you know, how do we steward over the money, and what kind of money should we be using? These were incredibly centrally important issues until the creation of the Fed. And then after 1913, that really dropped out of the political debate to a large extent. And now, I mean, until 2008, it wasn't even mentioned at all, and then obviously the Ron Paul campaign did bring that back to people's attention, and it caught on because obviously 2008 and the collapse that was happening sort of brought the Fed back into the spotlight. But really, I mean, that idea of where does this money come from and who is stewarding over it and in what way and who does this benefit, those are such fundamentally important questions that we are desperately asked to avoid asking, essentially. And that's interesting to me. That shows that there's something very interesting there that we really do need to be thinking about and talking about in the way that people used to 100 years ago, 150 years ago. That used to be such an important part of American politics. It isn't anymore. Why not?
You know, I believe, and Ron Paul seemed to suggest that the global buildup of gold by central banks is they know that a new monetary system is coming. You hear everybody talking about the new monetary system. I mean, this isn't something new. I've been talking about it for, I don't know for how long. How close are we? I mean, there's even suggestions that the coronavirus crisis is not a coincidence. You know, a lot of people think, and they've been talking about that, you know, this is all part of the deep state hitting the global economy and so forth and whatnot.
Right. Well, I don't know coincidence of timing or not, but it certainly will be used to say to pull the rug out from under the global economy and then say, look, it was the coronavirus that did it. It wasn't a horribly managed Ponzi scheme, essentially, that just exploded in our face. No, it was the coronavirus. So clearly this will be used for that agenda item. And what I've been talking about and warning about for many, many years is that, of course, the people who control the Federal Reserve System and the current fiat system as it exists right now are not stupid, and they know that this system is going to come to an end at some point, and that's why they've been diligently preparing the way for that, writing the white papers at the Bank for International Settlements behind the scenes that are being adopted by country after country. Of course, pretty much every major country in the world is a member of the Bank for International Settlements, so their central banks go to the big meeting and get the marching orders from the arch banksters and then implement them in their own countries. That's been going on for years and years. We saw immediately in the wake of the 2008 crisis, we saw the London G20 in April 2009. Of course, what were they calling for? The creation of a new world order. That was specifically what Gordon Brown was talking about at the time, then the Prime Minister of the UK. And that's exactly what they set about doing. And they started creating the I can never remember, the Financial Stability Board. I think it had already existed as a sort of informal group before that point, but it was empowered by the Bank for International Settlements in the wake of that London G20 to start creating essentially the international banking framework, which would do things like coordinate the first ever coordinated rate cuts amongst central banks in history, at least officially coordinated, took place in the wake of that 2008 collapse. I mean, so many different agenda items came together in the wake of that collapse. It will be that on steroids in the wake of whatever's coming. And unfortunately, with this coronavirus hype, one very, very real effect of that will be the economic effect. And that will no doubt be used to further that that agenda.
In a recent newsletter article, I believe the Iowa caucuses were forefront on your mind, and namely that the caucuses teach us something about the political process itself that one way or another defines the world that we live in, and you go on to present five lessons from that. You say with a big sigh, absolutely no one will learn from. And so there are five, one by one. Would you like to, you know, share with the listeners a little bit about your article and maybe touch on those 5 points?
Sure. Well, it's been almost a month since that whole Iowa debacle unfolded, so I hope listeners can remember that far back. We've been trained only to remember the last 15 minutes of news cycle, but yes, it was an absolute mess, to not use a four-letter word, to describe what took place there in the Iowa caucuses. It was absolutely ridiculous, and I feel bad for the voters who still believe in the system as it exists, who might still have some faith in that system, because it was clearly shattered. Just total nonsense. Inconsistencies being reported in the data even after they'd put a 24-hour moratorium on reporting results, and they started reporting data that's even some of the people involved in the caucus were saying, well, this doesn't match what the information we sent them, and those numbers don't even add up. And it was just total nonsense. And lo and behold, what did we find out? There was one of the apps that were being used to report the election results called Shadow. who wouldn't trust an app called Shadow? Created by some shadowy organization called Acronym, that was funded by a Silicon Valley billionaire and who had extensive political ties. It was staffed by old hands of Obama and Clinton. I mean, it was just a total nonsense. And, oh, by the way, I believe the CEO or one of the high-ranking people in that organization was having dinner with Pete Buttigieg right before the election, which amazingly put him in number one, although he hadn't even been trending. It was just total nonsense. So I tried to take some lessons out of this, the first level of which is to say, newsflash, in this age of electronic paperless voting, your vote isn't worth the paper it isn't written on, i.e. voting fraud of unthinkable proportions can certainly take place, and I think we just watched one example of that. And we've had indications of this for decades now. Back in, I think it was 2004 or 5, something like that, Clint Curtis was giving testimony that he had been asked to write touchscreen voting machine software that would flip an election, and that was back in 2000. And I believe that pertained to the Florida election, the disputed Florida election back in 2000. So,
hanging chads.
The hanging chads. But then there was some touchscreen sort of technology that was being introduced at that time. As a result of the hanging chads fiasco, actually, that was one of the things that kickstarted the voting machine agenda, and it goes on from there. And every single election cycle, there are dozens of videos and articles from all sorts of outlets saying, you know, yes, voting machines can be hacked easily. And here we send in a reporter with no skills and he did it in 13 seconds. Or the 11-year-old kid just hacked a voting machine after 3 minutes. I mean, these kinds of stories come up every single election cycle, but people are still, I guess, trusting that these are accurate reflections of what's happening in reality. Anyway, so I point out that, yes, that is in and of itself a fraud, but the broader picture, not just touchscreen voting, but the broader picture is, of course, the elections are rigged, precisely because we know that, for example, what was the big thing that the Russians did in 2016 by the Russians hacking the DNC emails, although there's absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever, but even if it were the Russians, what was it they actually revealed? Oh, such uncomfortable things like the DNC literally coordinating with the Clinton campaign to make sure that Hillary got the nomination and Sanders was kept out. Yes, the DNC literally conspired against one of their own candidates to make sure that their preferred candidate got the nomination, and later in court actually argued that since they are a private organization, they can rig their internal primaries any way they want. They actually argued that in court. So yeah, again, newsflash, no one, I mean, I don't even think Sanders is this outsider who's crusading and fighting for the center. But even if you do believe that, you have to understand that anyone who is actually going to pose a threat will never be in there in the first place. There's never going to be an election between this virtuous crusader outsider and the establishment candidate, because of course they're going to make sure that it's always establishment candidates in. Which leads to the next level of the scandal, which is essentially, yeah, everyone knows that this is all a rigged game from top to bottom, and no one ever calls it out on it for what it is, including Ron Paul, who absolutely, there were shenanigans in 2008 as well as 2012, but especially in 2012, all sorts of things, like changing the RNC platform via voice vote, which, even as you can tell from the video, he clearly won, but they say he lost, and all the types of shenanigans that were pulled, but no one ever calls them out on it. No one, they always just say, you know, trust the system and vote harder next time. And people still think they're going to get something. But for me, all of that is sort of, yeah, that's all consequentialist and the sort of the spectator sports of politics. Like, I liken it to wrestling. It's not even baseball or football, where at least there is the possibility that there are two teams that are really competing. No, it's professional wrestling, where there's a script, and you're given this hero to cheer for and this villain to boo, and one of them will win. But beyond that, the more fundamental level for me, and the one that I can never really seem to adequately communicate to people, is that government is itself an immoral institution. I don't want to clean up the system and make sure every vote is counted. No. The system itself is inherently wrong, immoral, corrupt, evil. It sanctions theft in the name of taxation. It sanctions murder in the name of warfare. It sanctions slavery in the name of conscription. It sanctions kidnapping. It's incarceration. Government is inherently immoral, and it's sanctified through the democratic process or whatever it is. Oh, 50% plus one voted for forced vaccinations. Well, then I guess we have to do it. Again, as I was saying earlier, ultimately it takes away our moral compass and instead swaps it out for whatever the ruling class are telling us this week. And it doesn't even matter if the ruling class is everyone in the entire world except you. If you still believe that it's wrong to do this or to murder someone or whatever it is, it doesn't matter if they say you are wrong for not wanting to do that. So if they put a gun in your hand and put a uniform on you and ship you halfway around the world to go kill people that you don't even know, and you think that's wrong, well, you better do it because it's the law. That's total nonsense. And it's only because we forfeit our natural moral compass for this institution of government that can even happen in the first place. And then ultimately I end up the editorial on a happier note, or at least a more empowering note, to say that there is a vote that you can take that actually does matter, and it's the vote of what you do, what you invest your time doing, who you spend your time with, what you spend your money on. The actions and the choices that you make in your life are the way that you vote for what kind of system you want to belong to, what kind of society you want to have. And you can choose to help feed the homeless or whatever it is, or to leave them to rot, or to do what it is that you think you should be spending your time and money on. And that's the choice that you make. But we absolve that when we think that just ticking a box for this or that candidate, that's what I've done, and that's my contribution to the world. And that's the most dangerous thing, because it takes our responsibility out of our hands and puts it in the hands of mommy and daddy government and let them fight it out. Whereas in reality, there is no government. It's only us. It's only individuals doing things in the real world. And our belief in government is actually dangerous. So in the end, I guess the real punchline here is this article isn't really about the Iowa caucuses at all. But I just want people who care about the Iowa caucuses to hear this message.
And you know, it's... You know, we've said for a long time, I mean, you know, the politicians, even our presidents, they're all chosen. You know, they don't get there unless they're picked. It's not the people who pick them. It's just all theatrics to some degree. But so it is. You kind of have to pull yourself away from there and do what really matters.
You know, and it's so easy to get caught up in the game.
It is.
I get it. And I understand why people invest their identities in it. It's like a sport, and you can get caught up in it. But just before you get over that precipice, just take a step back and really think about it, and really think about what you are doing in the actual world rather than what policy you are advocating for in some candidate that you're going to tick a box for.
Well, James, I was going to ask you if there was any one news story that you wanted to bring to the listeners, but I think we're just about out of time.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, okay, maybe next time. So maybe the coronavirus will be over, maybe, in 2 weeks. But that's all the time we have for today's program. I want to thank you again, James Corbett, for joining us. And as always, we appreciate your views and insights. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And we'll be back on Monday, same time. And until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.